Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron Middlekids there with Stacking Chairs, and in the studio I've got our local councillor therapist, Marie. Good morning.
Morning, Aaron. Ngā tamariwa whangaroa.
I was going to say it's a nice day, but the blooming clouds are going in front of the sun. Look at that.
Yep.
It'll come back, though.
It will. It's better days to come.
Indeed.
Spring is
and,
here.
And better days to come. This is probably going to be our message today. Regular listeners might even have heard me talking about everyone seems highly strung at the moment, like a... And this is my non-expert diagnosis. With the actual impact of COVID receding, we're left in a stressed state with a lot of unprocessed stuff as a community, I guess. But it's all made up of individuals, and some people are coping better than others. But everyone seems highly strung. I probably, if I'm honest, might include myself in that.
Mm.
I don't have that much self-awareness, to be sure, but... Marie might help me with that later. but yeah, it's you know, we're hearing especially like the impact on kids at the moment, like with a lot of pent up energy and anger in some places. You know, like I'm hearing all sorts of things around the place, from the school, from families, just from people I know. And some of us still can't talk to each other about things that happened over the mandates and stuff like that, and as you always say, we're doing life together and we're part of each other's lives regardless of whether we're trying to shut each other out. How do we get back to where we were, or is it more accurate to say how do we progress through to a new place?
Okay, so checking in with how we are expressing ourselves around certain subjects is probably a good idea. To notice whether we are finding ourselves being hopeful or hopeless. You know, to be going back to where...
Actually, can I leap in there? Something I haven't mentioned, not even off the air, is that there are a lot of kids around who are really feeling hopeless at the moment, more so than normal.
And I guess that's...
And I'm probably talking early teens.
Which is really our responsibility as the adults in their life and as the adults in their community to be speaking, certainly to be speaking hope back into our young people. I guess it's really important for us to check in how we are communicating stresses in our homes, like how we're communicating with each other, how we're talking, how we're relating to subjects that may come up in the news or that are happening around in our communities or in New Zealand, because our kids are picking up on the conversations we're having. And you know, if the atmosphere at home is quite doom and gloom and there's a lot of hopelessness spoken in regards to the future, our kids are picking up on that, that's for sure. I tend to think back in my younger years when there was the threat of nuclear war.
Yeah, it was a big deal in like the 80s, wasn't it? Yeah, there's a lot of fear about it. Well, and earlier too, 60s and 70s, I think.
I can't remember. Oh dear.
No.
I'm
not remembering either the 60s, but there were, I know there's those old films in the US of advice about what to do when if there was a nuclear explosion
and
like silly things like hide under the desk, or, you know, things that would never help.
I think they were just to divert us from what probably was going to happen. And I remember picking up as a kid very much the conversations had around our dinner table in regards to the threat that was out there and what could happen.
Right.
And as adults, we don't often remember that our kids are picking up on the conversations we're having, and they can't logic things out like we do. Their brain is still developing. Their sense of being able to balance things out or see a way through isn't there. And so they are just receiving the information that we are sprouting off at home. And so if they're picking up, like I did when I was younger, you know, a nuclear bomb could go off at any time and it will destroy the world. I mean, those are really big things for a kid to grapple with.
That's a similar narrative to some of the stuff that people have been talking, like, with the vaccine as a potential thing that was going to be very severe on people and unknown.
The unknown is a scary
dangers.
Place.
Yeah.
So
similar tone.
Yeah, and so if our young ones are picking up the threads of our conversations and then having their own conversations around all of this in regards to, there was all the idea that you never own a home,
you'll be shut out from society.
Yeah, pretty much that the future is quite hopeless, really, even though it's not. We have a great future. We're always going to have a great future. It's what we make it. But we're not hearing language like that. We're hearing that people are losing jobs, that the homes are outpriced and no one's going to end up in their own home. It's all going to be rentals, and rentals are through the roof.
All right, that's enough.
Okay, there we go. Stressed.
Bringing me down, Marie. You're bringing me down.
And, I mean, if you talk like that, that is what it feels like.
There. Yeah.
A huge, rock gets put on your shoulders and you just get... you feel the weight of that. Mm. And as an adult, we feel the weight of that. But as a youth, there's a sense of hopelessness. Like, oh, what's the point then? We're not gonna end up with anything. You're going to end up with a job where you're not going to get enough money and you can't pay your rent. And so what's the point of things? And so, youth will start to gravitate towards each other and look for those relationships where probably... they're getting up to some mischief because the sense of, oh, who cares? Let's just do this because there's a sense of adventure in it.
Nothing matters.
Yeah, well, the sense of unity is coming from a negative place rather than, wanting to achieve and make something of your life. Those dreams, those aspirations aren't being fed into our kids anymore. We're hearing... how difficult everything is. So we need to check in. We really do need to check in with how we are responding in our homes and take some responsibility and learn to pull back and have those conversations more with adults than just general conversations around our youth.
There's something I want to bring in too, because there's been time in our pretty much living memory, if you're 100, I guess, there was a time when... there weren't enough homes for people and things were hopeless, and if you didn't have a job, well, hopeless for the lower classes, and if you didn't have a job, you really were out in the cold.
Mm.
And there arose movements all around the world to address that, and they were called labour movements, and the modern Labour Party is a descendant of that, although it bears little similarity to it. But what I'm saying is that, forget the politics, there were movements started by people, grassroots movements.
Mm.
And that will happen again.
Yes.
At some point. Like, it's not hopeless. It's been done before once already to solve a lot of these problems. And, in fact, things have not fallen as to where they were 100 years ago.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But,
because we don't want to go backwards.
Yeah. So that is there. I don't know when or how it starts to happen. But there's already the groundwork has been laid at the moment, I think, by people... working away in places we're not aware of them at the moment, coming up with solutions. There will be, I, in some ways I'm envious of what might happen for the generation coming out now, that they'll get to be part of a, not a revolution, but a movement to bring justice back, economic justice back.
And change. We kind of need that. We need change. We need to have something that is going to increase our world, not decrease it. Increase our ability to know that that life is good. We really do need to change the narrative in regards to the negative connotations around our future.
And I know people can't see out of that. There are probably people listening now going, "Come on, Aaron, how are we going to get out of where we are?"
Oh, I'm gonna
things were worse. Things were worse 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
They were.
The first governments appeared in the Western world, and they happened here in Australia and the UK and America and through Europe. They all appeared, and they were all addressing the problems that the working class people had, which was just no safety net at all.
Yeah.
And it was a much more fearful existence than we have now, for a greater percentage of the population than we have now. So if they can rise out of that, we can certainly rise out of where we are.
Yeah.
Now.
And that's a very, that's an adult way of thinking. So you're logicking this out,
yep.
Making it sound like sense and that there is a future and some hope there. That's not what our kids are receiving.
No.
And so...
not all of them, anyway.
If we're talking about our youth and our younger people, then... my encouragement in home settings is to be very present in what we are speaking out around our children, around our young people, and that responsibility to, like I said before, to hold ourselves back from saying something. And that takes some... we've got a lot of activity.
Talk louder,
there.
Marie. Talk louder.
I don't know. I've lost my thought. That takes some responsibility to check in with our what we're saying and have that ability to pull back because we're aware of what we're doing to our, and speaking into our kids. We need to, you know, even if the future doesn't feel amazing right now or doesn't look amazing right now, the fact is, we are still going to move forward. We will still keep developing and finding new ways through. Right now, this is kind of like the mulling period where things are just starting to rise. And so there is great hope there for newness and ideas and ways of working through things that we may not have done in the past. There's going to be a new way, I think, of... moving forward into this future that we have, which is for some people looks quite unstable, but for others may look quite wonderful. I guess that depends on what it is you're picking up right now in regards to your own life and how you want to move forward with what you have. So I did want to talk about What If Land.
Yeah, yep. So tell us about What If Land. What's it like in What If Land? I think they're going into
there
the town hall.
Yeah,
it's near Belinda's near class. We've got the door. I was boasting before about how warm it was, and I've got the front door open to the studio now. Well, the noise is coming in.
It's all good. So this is very much around a metaphor. A metaphor is just building a picture in your mind about something, and it helps us. Once we have a picture built in our mind, it helps us to go there. And yeah, so this is very much a metaphor, and I think a lot of people are. Very much living in the what if land.
Yeah.
And the what if land is exactly what it says, is, you know, what if this happens and what if that happens and what about this and what about that. And if we think of it as a land in regards to a metaphor, so you've got the what if land, then you've got a body of water,
yep.
And then you've got the what is land, which is how things actually are in our life, the present
yeah.
and what we live in. So often what we do is we get in our boat and we row off to, or we build a bridge and we've got a bridge over to the what if land, and we tend to go over there. And the what if land is an okay place to be because it's a place where we can think and think outside the square or the box that we're in. So it's okay to be there and visit it, but it's certainly not okay to camp there and stay there. And I think a lot of people are actually camped in the what if land.
So what ifs can be positive, but we've seen a lot of negative what ifs, moment.
Well, if you take that to our thinking patterns, if we're stuck in what if land, that's anxiety. It will cause anxiety because what if isn't what is. It's what if this happens and what if that happens? What if I can't pay this bill? What if I can't, you know, do the shopping this week? Right, so we're not where we actually are. We're thinking about what if something happens, and so that's a huge place of anxiety, and there's not a lot we can do about that. We're just all we can do is think about it and mull over it, and that's what a lot of people are in that place of, well, what if this and what if that. And so I want you to get a picture of the what if land is quite barren. There's no trees on it. It's a very barren place. Nothing lands there. It's a place of wonder and curiosity. Like I say, if it's okay to visit it, but it's certainly not okay to camp there and start living there, because nothing is going to come to completion in what if land. It's always a place that is barren. Nothing grows there. It's a place of where we've got ideas and we're thinking about it, but nothing's landed. So, yes, it's okay to take yourself out and go there, but it's not okay to camp. So you've got to learn how to bring yourself back from what if land. So once you know you're in there and it's not causing you any – it's not doing any good for you, get a metaphor. Like get a picture of a boat and put yourself in the boat and start rowing back to what is, or put a motor on your boat and really hoon out of there, or build yourself a bridge and walk back. The metaphor is to help the brain, giving a process for the brain to work with to bring yourself out of ruminating and sitting in thoughts that are doing you no good and are causing huge anxiety. So the what is land is what is, and so that's a much more fruitful place. It's got trees, it's got life, it's got birds, it's got activity. It's a place where things can grow and do grow and are growing. So the what is land is very much our lives as they are. And so when we come from that place, we deal with what is today. You know, my what is. We're very present in what is and not the what if land. So in dealing with anxiety or people that are hugely anxious over the future, often they're living in the what if land. And that's really not a healthy place to be. We want to come back to actually, what can I do today? If you're feeling like, you know, I can't pay this bill on Friday, what can I do about that today? And look at that in this present moment. And you might find that there are answers in that. You could ring somebody, or you could talk to the power company, or, you know, maybe get some reprieve somewhere on a bill. You know, and in this moment, in today, we could solve this problem, not completely, but we could take the pressure off. And so if you're stuck in the what if land, you're just going to always be going, well, you know, well, what if this happens, or what if that, you know, eventuates, and what if they do drop the bomb, and what if they do, you know, we never do own a home, or what if, you know, a job is never going to sustain my living costs. It's way too much pressure in that place. It's massive.
If it was positive what ifs, that might work, but I guess we are talking about people who are stuck in the negative what ifs.
We're talking about what we are dealing with today in our society, and a lot of people are anxious and are ruminating over thoughts that they can't work through. There's no end to this. They come to some place and then there'll be another one. What if that? And it's an ongoing domino effect. No Dr. Feelgood feelings or sense of accomplishment or achievement is going to come from a place where nothing lands.
Why do we need those Dr. Feelgood feelings, a sense of accomplishment? Like maybe people might argue, well, that's it's nice to feel good, but it's not, is it a bit unnecessary?
Yeah. So tell me, if you're in the company of somebody who is very negative and has no sense of, you know, the future is good, how would you feel in that company? Do you think that the conversations are going to be uplifting and you're going to come away feeling great, or are you going to come away maybe with more rocks on your back than you walked in with, more information about why things aren't good? And I mean, we don't want to trick ourselves into believing things that aren't true, but truth sits in what is, not what if.
And I think too, like, your ability to see the possibilities that are the opportunities, the ability to see opportunities, you can't see it when you're stuck in that negative what if land.
Exactly, you can't.
And I think that's, for me personally, that's the reason to get out of that and to get into, well, you talk about Dr. Feelgood feelings and a world of possibilities, because opportunities will just march on by and you won't even see them, and they might be solutions to your problems. And I think that's, for me, that's what I keep reminding myself of.
Well, I guess you can, another metaphor is around the plant. You know, if you've got a plant and you want it to do well, you don't stick it in the shade somewhere with very little water and struggling to survive. You're going to want to put that plant in the right place where it grow its best, because you want the best from that plant. So why wouldn't we want that from ourselves or for ourselves as well? Like, if we're going to feed ourselves negativity all the time, it's a no-brainer that's not healthy for us.
I think we don't appreciate that. I feel like if I could do a comparison, like, we know if something feels bad physically, we shouldn't do it. Like, that's a clear sign, my leg is hurting, I'll stop stabbing it. Right?
Yeah.
Really. But when we hurt emotionally, we just keep on stabbing a lot of the time, right? And we teach our kids to keep on stabbing. And this wasn't going to be my metaphor, but we'll run with it. And we almost we respect the people who keep on stabbing. Like they're grinding it out. They're determined. They're like, you know, we don't have a culture of paying attention to when our emotions are telling us something's bad. And I'm wondering if that's we should just pay as much attention to that as to when our physical body is telling us.
Well, in the area of domestic violence or physical violence to another person, this has been talked about for years. Our emotional hurts they're not like you can't see a fat lip from emotional hurt or a black eye.
Well, that's true. It's not so measurable, is it?
So
obvious.
We don't see it.
Yeah.
It's more how we act it out. And negative emotion will affect our health as well, not just our thinking life, but also the rest of us. So we become unwell in ourselves. So it's like going back to the plant. You're not in a good place where you're getting what your needs met to grow to your fullness of who you are. You are stunting yourself by placing yourself in the dark and striving for some water now and then to just survive. Where, you know, we can do more than just survive. We can thrive. It's very much about our language and our ability to see that always the world has continued and civilization has continued and there are new opportunities yet to even come to the forefront. And we're only using a portion of our brain. You know, there's so much more yet to discover about who we are even as human beings. Don't lose the sparkle of life and the opportunities that come from that. If we're more into a place of feeling hopeful, we will move towards that. If we're hopeless, we'll move towards that. We've got to take some of that responsibility on, you know, which land do I want to live in here? Because if you're living in a place of what if, that's huge rumination. You're ruminating about things that actually have no answer at this point in time.
Can work that stuff out ourselves as adults, but we started off talking about the young ones. And especially we've talked about in the past many times teenagers and the teenage brain, the rational part of the brain that's offline for development during those years. So we have to do something for them, create a world for them, and surround them with that approach, with that hope, sense of hope.
You know, when we're little babies and we're starting to learn to walk. Often we have the adults around us encouraging us, come on, and they're lifting us up, and you're doing great. And our facial features, everything is responding in a really positive way.
And we don't go, oh my God, that walking is so useless. left.
You have no idea what's going to happen now you're walking.
Yeah, that's right. First it's the left, then it's the right. Work it out. Yeah, we don't do that, do we?
You know, you don't want to walk because it's going to cause you pain. Yeah. You're going to fall over.
I'm going to keep you away from the stairs because you're never going to cope with those.
No, exactly.
Yeah, no, we don't do all that stuff.
No. It's very natural for us, and if we look at that, it's very natural for us to be encouragers. Yeah. To go, it's great, and we get all excited. We get excited about it, just like the child does. And we're all lifted up, and she takes her first step, and it's, you know, it's amazing. They're growing up, and we're all excited. That's a great place to be. That's very nurturing and nourishing and full of hope, full of hope. If we were to take the other angle on that, which we don't, you don't want to walk. This is going to cause you pain.
Keep you
in the pram.
I think it's really obvious when you're talking about, like, the, you know, little ones when they're learning to walk. Like, they're so young, it's so clear that that's not the approach you'd take.
That's right. That's clear.
Yeah.
But now the kids are growing up. Now they're communicating, they're understanding language, and our responsibility seems to water down a bit. We forget that actually this plant, this human being needs nurturing and encouragement. It needs to be believed in. We need to fill them full of hope. You know, I've said it before, you, and I'll say it, so I'll just say it forever. You cannot over-encourage your children. Don't ever believe that. That's not true. That's not a truth. You cannot over-encourage a child. The more encouragement you give them, the more belief that you place within them, the more that they are going to sparkle and shine and believe in themselves. They need us to believe in them, because they have no other information out there that is going to inform them about anything. We're the ones informing them. The information that they may get, well, there is other information from the news or social media, or, you know. So it's even more important that we're feeding in the sense of being hopeful and that there is a future. There's always going to be a future. You know, life is for living, not for doom and gloom and the shadows. You know, we want to be in the light. We want to be moving ahead and embracing life, even when in the struggles, even in the hard times. We're alive and we're living. I mean, I'd rather be breathing and alive and doing something than nothing. Then it's all gone, you know. I'm not going to know about that because I'm not here. But, you know, that's it. You're up. That's it. The curtain's drawn.
I guess you must have been, like the stories you've told us about your early life, like there must have been times when you were thinking there was no hope.
Absolutely.
And like clearly you don't think that now. And in fact, you've got lots of evidence that there was hope at this stage of your life. So, but how did you get out of that? Or what moved you out of that?
Yeah,
Marie's now thinking back in time.
Well, it's a big question, because it wasn't just one thing.
Mm.
It was a process, and that to me, when I came to Raglan, things changed for me. I had never lived anywhere longer than 2 years. I'd shifted every 2 years, and so my relationships were limited in the depth of them.
Yeah.
Coming into Raglan, I put my roots down and I built relationships with people. And I built relationships with people that weren't people that I would normally build relationships with. So for me, my church environment was huge for me. Those were relationships that I had in there that were very nourishing for me, that I hadn't experienced anywhere else.
Because you'd been inside gangs and things, or the partner of a gang, a gang leader. I mean, are you going to write a book one day?
If someone wants to write it for me, definitely.
Yeah, give us a call at the studio after the interview, folks.
That's the one. Yeah, definitely.
And
it's interesting, because I understand why people are drawn to gang life. I really am. That sense of family and connectedness, and that somebody has got my back. Right, and I hadn't found that anywhere else in my world that I was living, and so that sense of family was very strong. However, so was the violence, and so were the undercurrents, and so was the negativity that I saw. Because you're right, it was, you know, I wasn't, I saw a lot, and I was privy to a lot of stuff, and it doesn't matter how you dress it up, there are going to be bad things happening in the undercurrents. So I understand the drive towards family and that sense of belonging. But for me, Aaron, I had a view of myself where I wasn't good enough. I wasn't good enough to be around good people, whatever that meant for me.
Yeah, that was the roadblock.
Yeah, that was a huge roadblock for me. So I had to, you know, do a lot of work within myself to feel acceptable even in society. For one, I was a solo parent.
You're going to get reinforcement about your negative self-image in this culture. Certainly in the past. I haven't talked to many solo mums lately, but I presume you still get looked down upon.
Well, back then,
unfairly.
Everyone, I think it was I can't remember whether it was a Tuesday or a Thursday, we all used to go to the bank to get our money out, and everyone knew that you were a solo parent.
Dull day.
It was hard. It was difficult, because how I felt about myself too, came alongside how society was seeing me. Well, that's what I believed. But for me, like I say, coming to Raglan, my church family was, when I went to church, there wasn't a lot of people at church. And I remember these two old ladies, beautiful, they've passed on now, but this one of the women made me a, knitted me a cardigan, a green cardigan. Bless your heart. Yeah, yeah. I never wore that cardigan.
Oh, really?
But I tell you what, the fact that she went out of her way to make me something had a huge impact on my life. It was, I couldn't believe that she spent that time to make me a cardigan. So the fact that I didn't wear it didn't actually matter, but the love and the feelings that I received from that act for me was the beginning of me going, wow, you know, I'd never seen a heart like that. I'd never been around people like that.
Yeah.
So it broke me inside. It brought me to be able to feel something. Of like, oh, and I didn't like the feeling because it was a difficult one for me.
It was a bit unnerving.
Yeah, it was.
Interesting.
It's like, ooh. But, the impact on me was massive. So, and then I allowed myself to open up to other relationships within the church in regards to people I would never have mixed with and were very suspect of, you know, because they were a different group of people than me and had different ways of thinking than I did.
I know that a lot of people struggle with organized religion, but I also know that within churches there's a narrative of redemption and that you can come from a bad place in your life and move on to a better place, and everyone loves to be part of those stories.
Yeah, well,
you know, I planted a seed with that person and they, you know, or I just was there at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, that even if, you know, like I'm talking about the people whose lives are mostly in order, they still want to be part of someone's story, of that story of redemption and
healing and being restored.
All that. Like,
or finding hope again.
There's a real vibe around that.
Who wouldn't want to be a part of that story?
Well, I know. When we talk about it like that,
why wouldn't you want to be a part of that great story?
Yeah.
Because I didn't find that anywhere else. So people can say what they like. I know where I started my journey towards healing and being restored, and that was around people who believed in me, who spoke hope into me. I remember, it's actually Shirley Pitt. She's passed on now. She was a big person in my life. She just, every time I, you know, she'd say, "Oh, you look great today, Marie," and I think, "Oh, really?" Like,
yeah, are you sure?
And then she'd say, "Oh, you and PJ, you're such a beautiful couple." I'd be like, "What?" No one had ever spoken to us like that. No one had seen us as a great couple. Nobody had spoken, that nourishment into us. We just felt like we were dragging ourselves along in life and here we are type thing, you know. But she saw something beautiful and she took an interest in me. And, I valued that woman very much. She filled a place in my life that was very empty. Mm. So, you know, finding these people that speak health and wellness and are nurturing and encouraging and see the good in you and want that to be brought out, wow, that's an awesome place to be.
Mm. Now I'm mulling over why those – because everyone does love a story of redemption, but why those stories aren't so prevalent, or there isn't that kind of thing in the secular world. I mean, it does exist, but it's not so.
I can see you thinking. I'm trying to
solve it as well, which is, I'm never going to achieve by myself. But why isn't it there? How could it be there? And what things are there? And of course, there are people working on things and living stories of redemption out there.
Mm.
But there's not like in the church has a culture of it, I think.
Mm. Well, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, we're mind, body, soul, spirit. You know, and just because you can't see your spirit, you can't see the wind, but you see the impact of the wind. We know it's there.
Yeah.
You know, and we have a spirit. And so, you know, when I did work around the Te Whare Tapa Whā model, Mason Jury's model, the house, four walls.
A model for mental well-being,
Yes, part of that is your spiritual wall. And it's a part of us that we don't look at. We never check in with.
We don't know how to measure it. If we get too scientific, we don't know how to measure it. But your soul might be aching anyway.
And your spirit is alive. So if you know, we take care of our natural body and what we see and what we know in front of us, but there is something more than that. And so if we're not taking care of all parts of ourselves, something is missing in us. So it's about looking at ourselves further than just the body and knowing that we are still developing as human beings and there's so much more yet to learn. And unless you've been in a place of discouragement where you know what that really feels like and you've walked that out, to be in a place of encouragement is like, oh my gosh, this is like fresh air. It's like oxygen. I can breathe, you know. And that's it's a wonderful place to be, Aaron. I can't, you know, I mean, it changed my life. Regardless of what people might think, that changed my life to be around people who gave me hope.
Yeah.
And gave me a faith that I could use in my own life and those principles in my own life and values that have brought me to where I am. I wouldn't be where I am without those people speaking into my life, those wonderful little old ladies doing something beautiful and selfless acts.
Yeah.
Simply, and
you hadn't seen a lot of selfless acts.
No, we don't, do we?
No, but before then.
Oh, selfless! Did I see any selfless?
Hadn't seen any a lot of selfless acts, not directed your way.
No way! I couldn't. No, no.
Marie screwing up her face here at me, folks.
No, so I was just in survival mode. Yeah. I was just in survival mode all the time, and I had no hope and no future. Not that I could see. Everything was a struggle for me. Nobody was helping me along and saying, well, you're doing really well in that, Marie. You know, well done. Just keep going. You know, I'm here for you.
You had a daughter and maybe a son by this?
When I came to Raglan, yeah. A daughter and a son, yeah. I was getting my...
Like, I don't know your son, but your daughter Jess didn't arrive at adulthood with... She had a sense... She obviously had a sense of hope. By the time I met her when she was about 16.
My kids, I mean, that was, for me as a parent, I guess I parented from a place that I didn't get parented from, which means that I understood what it was like to sit under a parent that was, you know, my needs for a child probably weren't met.
Yeah.
And so I was determined that that wasn't going to be that way for my kids. So I poured into my kids, absolutely. I didn't have money, certainly didn't have money or worldly things, but I had encouragement. So even though,
because there must have been a period there before you started having people around you that gave you a sense of hope, that you're somehow still giving your kids a sense of hope. Or people are saying, or did you think you were, but maybe you weren't really?
Oh, no, I was. Yeah, definitely was. Because finally I had a little human being that I was accountable to. And that changed my life. Mm. It took me out of the gang life because I didn't want to bring my daughter up around that. Mm. And so I made a change in my life there. And I poured into her she was a shining star to me. And I wanted the very best for her, but it wasn't about what I could provide, it was what I could put in, my love that I could give, my seeing the best in her, seeing her, this little human being that was part of me that I had created. It was, it was a life changer for me, and I'm very thankful for that, very, very thankful for that. And all my kids, I think they're amazing, considering where I come from. Or came from, and where they are, I couldn't be more happier as a mama bear. I'm like so proud of my kids. They have exceeded any expectation I could have had. I mean, my expectation or my hope was that they just didn't end up in jail sometime, you know, like something.
So you definitely got to win there.
I won lotto 10 times over, you know. But if I look at how I parented now and what I was pouring into my kids, I get it. Because to me, I wanted my kids to be in the sunshine. I wanted them to grow and see the best in themselves. I didn't do it perfect. Hey, I didn't get it right all the time. Definitely didn't get it right, and made some probably big mistakes in that parenting as I was learning. But as I put myself in the right places, around the right people, I got the right information, how to parent my children, because I had no skill set to really go by, and I had a lot of trauma that was sitting there. So, you know, my parenting skills definitely needed to be honed up a bit.
I think we all felt that at various stages.
Well, we do, because we're thrown into it. We're not. Yeah. This isn't something that's got a rule book attached to it, because every child is so different. Mm.
So, folks, we're talking with Marie Harworth, local counsellor therapist, and I always seem to talk about your story. I do like to make things concrete, I think. Like, we've talked a little bit theoretically about, you know, a lot of people at the moment, we're dwelling in the what-if land of a negative place of what if this goes wrong, what if this goes wrong, and we need to get out of there. Failing having a church to go to on Sunday morning and meet some nice old ladies who give you a green jersey or a green cardigan like you had. I mean, there are I'm sure that as a counsellor you've got techniques, things for people to do to get their mind into a different place. And I imagine sometimes going surfing is a way to do that.
Great.
Yeah. I know rock climbing used to do that for me when I used to do that. Yeah.
Like in the moment, if you feel like you're ruminating, you know, if you like doing puzzles, word search, those sort of things, anything that'll shift our thinking for a time, getting out in the sunshine, obviously going for a walk, because we live in an amazing place. We've got the beach, we've got the bush. Like, we are so blessed to aesthetically have things that we can see around us that will shift our well-being into a better place. So you've got to grab what's in front of you, and that is what is. And we have a lot of what is in Raglan. We have the beautiful beach, we have the mountain, and the tracks that we can do, and the bikes. You know, you can do some great bike tracks now, and the skate park, and, you know, there's different things that we can actively do to shift our thinking. But we have to do that. We've got to be responsible to want to do that, and get out and do something different. It doesn't have to be cost effective. Like, we don't have, cost effective. It doesn't have to hold a cost to it. It's free, which is great.
Well, that is cost effective.
It is cost effective, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone wants to come to Raglan, a place that nobody ever wanted to come to. Now everyone wants to be here. Aren't we lucky we're here? We've got to take on board actually where we are and work with where we are. We are very blessed to be living in Raglan. Take on the blessings that are here. Look in what's going on in your community. Build some relationships. I mean, for me, I had no relationships when I came here. I'm so thankful to be connected to people. Good or bad, you know, whether it's always good or whether it has its bad moments, it doesn't actually matter. I feel like, you know, you're involved in life when you're connected to others. Yeah.
Okay, Marie. That's cool.
Good.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And, I enjoyed the story. I think that was, for all the advice and the technical understanding, the story of you turning your life around is...
I'm so thankful for that story.
Yeah, it does the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I feel.
Yeah, it feels good, and it feels good to say it, because everyone has opportunities. Everyone does, to turn their life and change it and turn it around to where you're with, you know, bring the people around you who are going to support you and see the value of you. That's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah. All right, thanks for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.